In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And welcome, everybody. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. I believe this is episode 35, I think. And we're working on the Veil of Mysteries this week. We're on chapter 12. We're in part 2 of the Veil of Mysteries. And I am home from my biggest travels of the year, which is cool. All safe, all well, and looking forward. I did just get done with a break, looking forward to a couple of more conferences, and then I mostly get to be done, which is going to be a relief. So anyway, I guess it's about time to get started. Let's hit the V for V ad real quick, and then we can go. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right. And with that, welcome to all of our listeners, to Mel, to Luke, to oldest, second, and third. And we are doing chapter 12 of The Veil of Mysteries. Go ahead and take it away, Mel.
And it's like a tribe of children floating around out there in a ship that flies on rainbows. And they all follow the one called Bright Star. It's unnatural, I tell you.
Overheard in a cantina on Bounty. When they left port, they were in for a surprise. As they got out of the atmosphere and set their course for Solus, Andrew was eyeing his plot nervously. He looked back to Nate and said,
27 other ships launched from the Bounty City spaceport within a few minutes of us. They're not approaching, but they're generally following us.
Nate frowned in response. Any indications of what they're doing? Any communication? Andrew shook his head grimly.
None.
Nate looked over to Jesse and Keevan. Any ideas? Keevan immediately shook his own head, looking just as grim as Andrew. Jesse, on the other hand, was frowning thoughtfully.
Nate, you're a celebrity now. Well, you've been at the conclave every day. I was in the cantinas and walking the streets talking to the people. You've been trying to get them all to listen. It's working. I think some of them are following us because they want to stay near you.
Or because they want to hurt him.
Shannon added grimly from her station. Jesse nodded, but then he shrugged.
Yeah, but they can't all be out to get us, and that's a lot of witnesses.
Nate thought for a long moment, then shrugged as well. I agree. In fact, Andrew, let's reduce our speed to half of max on this trip. I don't want to leave them behind. Andrew looked at him incredulously, then shook his head.
You're the boss.
23 of the 27 ships followed them all the way to Solus. 2 of the launches had been coincidental, and their efforts to get away from Nate's unintentional flotilla were almost comical. 2 others had actually messaged Adamant en route to signal they were turning back but were not in distress. When they reached Solus, the situation was similar to the one they'd found at Bounty. An industrial space station circled the planet while commercial and tourism traffic were directed to the spaceport in Salisbury, the planet's largest city. The Salisbury flight controller seemed harried. No surprise with 30 vessels to coordinate at once, but he directed them to a berth on the outskirts of the spaceport. Unlike Bounty, Solus was a full member of the Telestry. Shortly after they landed, Adamant received a call from the special assistant to the adjutant, the Telestry's planetary governor, welcoming them and asking how long they intended to stay. After a conversation that lasted far too long for the simple information the man wanted, most of which Andrew didn't even have, he closed the connection and grunted sourly.
He sure thinks a lot of himself.
Keevan grinned at him, pointing with his UPT.
A high muckety-muck underfunctionary with little tin god syndrome, eh? We're moving up in the universe. They're not ignoring us anymore.
Gazing out of the bridge window on the spaceport, now bustling with activity from the travelers who had followed them to Solus, Shannon snorted.
Or a bit hard to ignore.
She eyed Nate speculatively.
You know they've been getting rebroadcasts from Bounty's conclave, don't you? There's no way they don't know who you are by now.
Nate shrugged. It had to happen. I'm just glad people get to see it. The same day they landed, Nate went to the conclave in Salisbury to speak, again accompanied by three of his friends, Rachel, Ty, and John this time. As soon as he entered the structure, built above ground with a permanent roof, likely because of the nearly constant rain in Salisbury, Nate could feel the difference in the atmosphere of the crowd. There were actually more people here, but the crowd was subdued. A Telestic who was obviously tasked with keeping order in the conclave sat attentively near the podium. He was a gray-haired gentleman with a weathered face and dignified air. When he caught sight of Nate, his eyes went wide and he looked as if he might object when Nate stepped forward to speak. But instead, he simply sat there, his jaw clenched. Again, Nate surveyed the crowd before he said anything. They talked among themselves and there were shouts here and there, but the boisterous joviality of Bounty was missing. Nate started slowly again to gather their attention. Most of you probably think entropy is a problem for energemetrists. He looked around, slowly, frowning. For generations, the Telestry has taught that Energemetry 6 is only available to a select few. They send Telestics to test you, and only a few are chosen for their abilities. He paused again. The crowd was mostly silent now, and with his next words, the rest quieted instantly. Every single one of you has the ability to grasp and use Energemetry 6, though you don't know how. Nate waited a long time before he spoke again, scanning their faces. Finally, he said, In one sense, the Telestry was right to keep this secret. Most Telestics are never even told. They believe, just as you do, that the use of the fields is reserved to the select few who can become the most powerful, and there is good reason. The Telestry has been forbidden to admit or teach anyone whose ability does not rise to a certain level. The early Telestics taught everyone, and because they did, those with only a little ability in the fields burned out from entropic shock. Hundreds of trainees were killed. And for most of you here today, if you tried to use Energemetry 6 for even the smallest task, you would overexert yourselves and die. The Telestic in charge of the conclave, who might have been on the verge of stopping Nate before, was now sitting back in his chair, his expression conflicted. The crowd was buzzing, but Nate raised his voice and continued. Have you ever known anyone who died for no reason at all? Have you seen a rainbow from the corner of your eye, but when you turned to look at it, it was gone? This is why I must teach you about what we call entropy. Nate waited for the audience to quiet again. The Telestic had a look somewhere between shock and guilt now, all signs of resistance gone. Nate looked over the crowd once more. Once there was quiet, he said, Before the escape and the betrayal, entropy was only a rule. It said that whatever happens, some energy will always be lost. It wasn't until the betrayal, When reality was twisted and any use of Energemetra 6 drew a part of its energy from its user, that entropy came to mean death. The physical laws of the universe were corrupted by the enemy who still pursues us. Nate paused again. The elderly Telestic just sat there, his eyes now looking haunted. Nate put the man out of his mind. After a moment, Nate said, "There will come a day when everyone uses Energemetra 6. The universe must be set right." Nate took questions, but there weren't many. Either the audience was too shocked, or they were too used to being told what to do and what to think. A few glared darkly at Nate as he stepped down from the podium. Rachel stared around at the crowd and gave Nate a concerned look.
"Maybe we'd better head back."
Part of Nate wanted to argue, but he didn't have any real reason to, so he nodded and they started back to Adamant. As they were leaving the conclave, however, they encountered a small knot of excited, well-dressed people. Upon seeing Nate, their excitement went from relatively muted to open jubilation. They were all talking at once, so it took Nate a few seconds to realize that their accents were slightly different from the rest of those he'd met on Solace. From there, he only required a few more seconds to piece together that these were some of the folks who had followed them from Bounty. One man, even louder and more boisterous than the rest, managed to push his way forward to Nate and reach to shake his hand.
"Name's Reggie. How do you do?"
Nate didn't immediately respond, and Reggie plowed on.
"You're Nate, right? It's great to meet you. We can't wait to join your movement. Aurora won't know what hit her."
Nate blinked and then shook his head and asked, "What movement? What do you mean, Reggie?" Reggie seemed genuinely shocked by the question.
"What do you mean, what movement? What you been talking about in the conclaves? We're going to change the galaxy. We got work to do."
"Ah, I see," Nate nodded. "And what do you propose to do, Reggie?"
"What do you mean, what do we do? You're the boss. You tell us what to do."
Reggie's enthusiasm was slackening a bit with his obvious confusion, but the certainty in his purpose was absolute. Behind him, one of the others from the crowd put in,
"I told you, Reg, we're going to have to set it up ourselves. These visionary types got no ability to organize. It's up to us, I'm telling you."
Nate's eyebrows shot up his forehead and he snorted at the absurdity of the assertion. But Reggie was not to be contradicted.
"Nah, Georgie, give him a tick to adjust. You can't just bowl him over like that."
Reggie's lack of self-awareness was enough to take the situation from ridiculous to comical for Nate, but he saw their earnestness and didn't smile. Instead, he just nodded, raising his voice so the entire group could hear him. "I want to thank you all for coming. When I started speaking, I should have expected some of you to respond this way." He shook his head ruefully. "I never thought anyone would follow me from one port to another, and I wish this time you'd stayed home. I came to Solace because I expected trouble. I don't want you to get hurt because of me." Nate stopped, frowning, and the group in front of him erupted in confused chatter. After a moment, Nate raised a hand for silence and shook his head. "The time will come when I may lead you more directly, but now isn't that time. You're welcome to stay and enjoy Solace, of course. I plan to be here for a while." He hesitated, then shrugged and added, "If you do stay, you might want to find a solid place to shelter." Nate glanced reflexively at the sky as a new explosion of talk broke out. Taking advantage of their excitement, Nate bid Reggie and Georgie goodbye. Then he turned to rejoin his friends, resuming his return journey to Adamant. Solaceboro was surprisingly scenic. It was obvious the settlers had built to some fondly remembered architectural theme from Earth. Some of the structures were many hundreds of years old, but they held up amazingly well, with paneled wooden buildings overhanging cobbled stone walking streets. The ground was more uncomfortable to his feet than most of the walking streets he'd used, but the scenery's charm was enough that he didn't mind. When they reached the spaceport, the others had walked on ahead while Nate took the opportunity for some solitude. He entered the spaceport through the gateway that faced north toward the conclave, his friends well ahead of him, and began walking down the rows of berths toward Adamant. This spaceport didn't have one of the slide walks he was used to, so progress was slow. They had, of course, dispensed with the cobbles for the benefits of advanced concrete. It took Nate far longer than it should have to realize there was a girl walking beside and slightly behind him. Traffic was sparse, and he couldn't remember when she had appeared there, but there she certainly was. She was small, with brown hair, wearing what could only be described as rags. She looked almost mousy. The furtive glances she shot behind her every few seconds made the impression even stronger. She caught Nate's glance toward her and started to shrink back, but then she visibly straightened and asked,
"You the one they call Brightstar?"
Nate smiled and nodded. "I am." The girl walked a little faster to catch up.
I need your help. Or rather, me mate does."
Her startlingly green eyes darted back and forth, as if she were ready to bolt, but there was a determination in the set of her small shoulders. Nate stopped and turned directly to her, then nodded again. "All right, what can I do?" Her head darted from one side to another, as she stopped as well.
"Nadia, they're watching. Somewhere else."
Nate shrugged. "Come with me to the ship, then. We can talk there." The girl hesitated, looking even more nervous than before, if that was possible. But after obviously thinking about it, she nodded in return. They started off again, together this time. The girl seemed at least a little relieved, though her head kept swiveling back and forth, and it was obvious she was expecting trouble. After they'd been walking for a minute or two, Nate looked over to her and asked, "What's your name?"
"Lissa,"
she said shortly, quickening her pace. When they reached Adamant a few minutes later, Nate tried to usher Lissa up the ramp before him, but she stepped to one side and the nervous look she'd begun to lose came back full force. He sighed and walked into the ship ahead of her, glancing back once to be sure she actually followed. Once they were inside, Nate's hand automatically went to the airlock controls to close it, but instead he turned to Lissa and raised his eyebrows. She actually blushed, but she nodded. Even so, when the airlock closed, she flinched. Nate smiled at her lopsidedly. "You can leave any time you want, I promise." Lissa nodded and gave him a weak smile in return.
"We haven't got a choice anyhow. They're gonna kill him."
Nate nodded back, but before he could reply, John asked from behind him,
"Wait, who's getting killed?"
Nate turned to John. "This is Lissa." He turned back to Lissa and said, "Come to the bridge. I expect everyone will want to hear this sooner or later. May as well tell it once instead of two or three times." A short walk and another set of introductions later, they were all crowded around Lissa, and Nate asked, "Now, who's killing who?" Lissa nodded. Looking uncomfortable, she said,
"That adjutant is my mate, Ralph. He's killing him. Sucking the life right out of him. Using him up."
There were tears in her eyes, and she bowed her head.
"I'm not strong enough to help him. You gotta do something. I've lost too many already."
Nate frowned in thought as Jesse asked, almost hesitantly,
"You said they're draining him. Are you talking about emulsion?"
Lissa sneered.
"Yeah, that's what they call it. What a fancy words they like. They're killing him. Simple as that."
Nate shot a questioning look at Jesse, while the others, all except Kevin and Ty, looked blank. Jesse grimaced.
"Emulging is just awful. It's how the Telestry killed Siva Redding, and he was a legend. The Telestry's supposed to be the good guys. That means they can't ignore what's going on here, even if they try. They can't afford for people to think they're connected to this sort of thing."
He shook his head in disgust before he continued.
"They forcibly drain E6 from a person. Sixes, especially untrained ones, give their E6 over to the flow by instinct. And once they start, they can't stop. It's only partially voluntary. It takes a lot of training to resist it. Too much causes entropic shock and death. And the people doing the draining have no way to know how much is too much for any particular person."
Ty cut in, frowning.
Old Professor Lord told us a Muldrane summoning is like stealing their life force. The power is free to the one doing the stealing, whatever little they can get. But it's even worse than normal burnout for the poor guy getting drained. I'm pretty sure he wasn't supposed to talk about the Muldrane, but somebody asked.
Ty shrugged.
The Telestry only allows it as punishment for the capital crimes, like murder.
Lyssa snorted derisively.
Rolf didn't hurt nobody.
Kevin eyed her skeptically. Ty's right. That might have been how they killed Great-Granddad in the bad old days. But now, a Telestry official wouldn't allow that for just any offense. He must have done something pretty awful. Lyssa turned to Kevin with cold anger.
Oh, oi. I was taking food that wasn't his. And he only had to because my Lord Adjutant put him on the list in the first place. 3 strikes, he's dead. And him only wanting to feed his sisters.
Nate laid a hand on her shoulder. What list? And what did he do to get put on it? Lyssa looked startled.
Suppose they don't have the shame list wherever you're from, eh? Sometimes he adds you when you say something he doesn't like in the conclave. Sometimes it's because you was blocking his way or something like that. Rolf got ordered because he was making trouble. You know how he was making trouble?
Lyssa's sneer returned full force.
I wouldn't let one of those pervs near his sister. Punch a bugger right in the mouth he did. And well, once you're on the list, nobody will give you a walk. Afraid of making Adjutant angry, they all. What was he supposed to do? Let his brothers and sisters starve?
Ty shook his head slowly, his expression sick.
If this is true, it's awful. When they test you at the Telestry, they make you use too much E6 that you go into tropic shock. Not enough to kill you, but I sure felt like I was dying. Muldrane is so bad they wouldn't even talk about it. And tropic shock day after day until it kills you? On purpose?
Jesse made a noise in his throat, and Nate glanced up at him. Jesse looked uncomfortable, but he said,
Nate, where did you find her? By her own admission, her friend is a violent thief. Are you sure?
He trailed off, but Nate could see the doubt and even a bit of disgust in his expression. Looking around at the others, Nate could see that at least half of them agreed with Jesse. Lyssa saw it too, and her eyes flashed dangerously.
Well, fine then, if that's how it is.
She turned to go, but Nate said quietly, Lyssa? She stopped and looked back, her eyes still flashing, and Nate continued. It looked to me like it took all the courage you had just to talk to me. Is that about right? Lyssa blushed, and her mouth opened to reply, but before she could say anything, Nate addressed the others. As much difficulty as she had coming to me, I can't repair with a cold shoulder. You may have a point, but I need to know for sure. Besides, I had a dream. Nate paused and shook his head. I need to check into this. Jesse nodded in acquiescence, and the others all followed suit. Jesse cleared his throat and asked,
How do you want to do this, then?
Nate looked back to Lyssa. Where are they keeping him? Lyssa brightened visibly, though her glance at the rest of Nate's party was anything but friendly. She gestured in the general direction of the conclave.
He's at Broadwell.
At Nate's questioning look, she made a face.
The Adjutant's jail. I'll show ya.
Nate's friends all insisted on going along, and Andrew and his sisters wanted to take the time to lock Adamant down securely before they left. During the exchange, Rachel had been watching Lyssa thoughtfully. As everyone prepared to leave, she pulled Nate aside. Nodding toward Lyssa, Rachel said,
She's an odd, Nate.
Nate raised an eyebrow at her. How do you know? Rachel shrugged.
I'm not sure. I can see it somehow.
Nate frowned thoughtfully, then nodded and turned to go. But Rachel stopped him.
Nate, I have to go find Dad. I have to. He's...
She stopped and shook her head helplessly. Nate sighed. Rach, I can't leave here yet, even if what Lissa's told us comes to nothing. I told you I had a dream about this place. At the end of it, something fell out of the sky and hit me in the head. Something more is going to happen here. I know it. Rachel shrugged almost despondently, and Nate squeezed her hand. I know you want to see him again, but don't lose sight of what's in front of you, okay? What we're doing matters. You'll see. It actually took them nearly half an hour to leave Adamant. By the time everyone was ready and the ship was fully shut down and locked, Lissa was practically dancing with impatience. As they walked away from Adamant, she scampered ahead before dropping back to walk with the group, obviously resenting their slow pace. Their destination was about a half-hour walk away on the other side of the conclave. The walk was as pleasant as Nate's earlier walk to and from the conclave, and it would have been easy to forget their purpose, as they exclaimed over the charm of the architecture and the age of the city, some of which dated back nearly to the escape itself. After their exposure to the crowds on Bounty, Shannon and Laura were at least somewhat prepared for the crush on Sullisboro's streets, though they both kept a watchful eye on the people around them. Nate got the feeling that Laura was doing something with her psi talent, as their group always had a small, inexplicable bubble of space around it in even the most tightly packed crowds. Shauna had by far the most difficulty. She took one step out of the ship, gasped, and closed her eyes. For the rest of their walk across the city, she kept her gaze fixed firmly on her feet, refusing to look up for any reason. Ty stuck close to her, even taking her by the hand at times, and John took up a position ahead of her without ever saying a word, leading the way so she didn't have to look up. Andrew, on the other hand, was completely unaffected by either the crowds or the open space. If anything, some of the strain he'd built up over the past weeks of work with Energemetra 6 seemed to clear once they were in the open air. When they reached the imposing stone block building that Lissa had called Bridewell, Nate led the way through the main doors. The rest of his group followed him in, and with 10 of them, including himself, they made quite the crowd. The uniformed officer sitting behind the barred desk blinked in surprise at seeing Nate, then caught sight of Lissa behind him, and the surprised look instantly became a smirk.
"This'll be good."
The officer fixed Nate with a snide grin above his handheld. Nate decided politeness was his best strategy, despite the officer's attitude. Sir, do you have a prisoner here named Ralph? The smirk turned into an outright sneer.
It's Constable Bradford, and I've got 7 Ralphs. The one you want's in the special facility back here. Dr. Applebaum's using him as we speak. If you listen real close, you might hear him screaming.
It was Nate's turn to be surprised, but behind him, Lissa let out a screech and started yelling incoherently at Bradford, who chuckled.
Careful, missy. Treating an officer of the government like that's liable to get you thrown in there with him. Course, you're a bit young for that.
He leered at her and set his handheld down to lean back in his seat. Nate felt his gut clench, and what had been an attempt at politeness turned to cold anger. Lissa was still yelling, her accent so thick as to make her incomprehensible, and Nate held up a hand toward her. Hush. She quieted, and Nate turned back to Bradford. Can you tell me, please, why he's in here?
Sure.
It was obvious now that Bradford was enjoying himself.
He was picked up for thieving. 3rd strike. He was a known troublemaker anyhow. Was on Adjutant Celedris's registry, he was.
The guard leaned forward toward Nate and mock whispered.
Rolf, he's a violent one, you know. Smacked me mate Ori a good one, he did. Knocked his front teeth right out of his head. That's what got him put on the list.
Nate nodded slowly, then said, Let me guess, Ori was trying to get friendly with Ralph's sister? Bradford snorted in derision and sneered at Nate.
He's common street trash. Good for nothing. She's a pretty one, though. Sooner she learns what's good for her.
For a brief moment, Nate was beyond thought. He actually saw red. Bradford cut off mid-sentence as he flew backward out of his chair and skidded across the floor. Instead of going for the barred door to his right that led to Bradford's desk, Nate grasped the bars in front of him with one hand and lashed out with Energemetra 6. The bars and desk disintegrated, sending shattered pieces of furniture and steel flying across the small room beyond, leaving shrapnel sticking into the stone walls and pelting Bradford with smaller fragments. At the last second, Nate threw up a partial shield around Bradford, so none of the larger pieces hit him. Then Nate was through the holy maid and standing above the officer. A kick to the ribs, with Nate reluctantly using only his physical strength, interrupted Bradford's own belated attempt to grasp the fields and knocked the wind out of him at once. For what felt like a long time, Nate stared down at Bradford, his foot raised to kick again. Bradford was gasping for breath now, and as reason returned and his flash of anger cooled, Nate lowered his foot and said quietly, but with steel in his voice, "People, even the lowliest people, are not trash. How many people is the government here executing by emulging for crimes like theft?" Bradford didn't answer, though his breathing had returned to normal. He simply stared up at Nate with fear in his eyes. "Well," Nate asked, "how many, and on whose authority are you doing it?"
I'm not doing anything. It's the adjutant who authorized it. He's always at the conclave this time of day. Go see him."
Bradford was obviously in shock and half panicked. Nate's eyes flashed. "How many, Bradford? How many people are being punished this way for non-capital crimes?" Bradford flinched back.
"I don't know. Dozens? Hundreds?"
Nate nodded grimly. "Get up." Bradford looked at him, eyes wide, and Nate barked, "Get up." Bradford scrambled to his feet, then backed against the wall behind him. Nate nodded again. "Now, go find the adjutant and tell him I'm coming. And if you dare try to use E6 against me or my friends, I'll make sure you can never use it again." Bradford hesitated, obviously expecting further violence, and Nate stepped to the side and pointed out the hole he'd left in the bars behind him. "Go." Without looking at Bradford again, Nate turned to the door that led further into the building and considered it, then looked through it using Energemetra 6. Seeing no one directly on the other side, he shrugged and lashed out again. The door exploded inward, and he glanced back to see his friends staring after him, wide-eyed. Lyssa had a look on her face like Christmas had come early. The others just looked stunned. Nate smiled at her crookedly, but without much humor. "Sometimes a point has to be made." Stepping forward into the hallway, then pausing, Nate looked around. "Lyssa, do you know where Ralph's cell is?" Lyssa bit her lip.
I think so. They only let me in to see him once."
Nate frowned thoughtfully. "Anybody who wants to go see if they can find that special facility he was talking about?" He looked at the rest of the group. Jesse immediately stepped forward.
"I'll go. Anybody else want to come?"
He too looked at the others questioningly. John and Rachel exchanged a glance and nodded. And Jesse nodded back.
"Good enough."
The three split off, turning down the corridor to the right, while Lyssa directed Nate and the rest of the group to the left. They advanced into the building slowly, with Nate leading the way and simply blasting any door or wall that was in his way. Once or twice, he caught fleeting glimpses of people running from them as he checked behind walls or doors before he destroyed them. But by and large, they found the front quarter of the Bridewell unoccupied. When they got to the cell blocks, Nate tried to blast the entry door and found he couldn't. Something inside him rebelled, stopping him. Nate tried again, and the same mental block made him stop again. It was exactly the same feeling he'd had on Lighthouse Station when the schemic stopped him from using Energemetra 6 on the crowd. He paused and looked at the steel door in front of him, puzzled. Then, using the fields, he scanned further ahead and found there were people in cages to either side of the hallway before him. Some huddled at the backs of their cells, staring in his direction. If he had used enough force to blow this door, the shrapnel would probably have killed some of those people outright. Changing his tactics, Nate grabbed the door with Energemetra 6 and heaved, wrenching it out of its frame and tossing it to the side. The little group moved on, walking down the next hall and turning left again. As they passed by, many of the prisoners crowded up to the bars, begging to be released. Nate passed by them reluctantly, promising himself that he would see to finding them real justice once he'd left. It took another few minutes, but they reached the cell Lissa had remembered from her previous visit. There was nobody inside at all.
"Well,"
Andrew said, looking into the tiny room.
"I guess that means we're headed for the special facility."
Nate nodded, and they turned to retrace their steps. When they reached the door Nate had wrenched from its hinges, they found Rachel coming toward him from the other direction.
"I think we found him,"
she called, motioning back the way she'd come. As soon as they reached her, passing back through the twisted wreck of the doorframe, she said,
"We're pretty sure we found the special facility, and there's an old man there."
"Ralph's not old. He's only 17.
Lissa said, frowning. Rachel shrugged.
"Come see for yourself."
They followed her down the hall, turning right twice, then left again before they finally stopped in front of another steel door, this one with the latch melted away. Rachel smiled wryly.
"We couldn't get it open. Jesse took care of it."
They passed through and found themselves in something halfway between a laboratory and a torture chamber. John was bent over a slight, ancient-looking man strapped to an angled table, his arms in manacles to either side while Jesse stood by, watching. At first, Nate thought the man must be dead, but after a moment his chest moved slightly. All Nate's friends stopped as they came through the door behind. Then Lissa caught sight of the man and let out a shocked cry, running to him in obvious distress.
"Ralph! Oh, Lightmaker, what'd they do?"
Lissa's face was white as she reached out a trembling hand to touch him. She looked at Nate.
"He's only 17.
Nate looked at the man again and shook his head in disbelief. He crossed the room and John stepped aside while Nate laid his hands on Ralph's head, allowing Energemetra 6 to flow out of him. What came back was such a sense of destruction and ruin that he actually cried out and pulled his hand away in shock. Lissa was weeping openly as she cradled his face in her hands.
"They've killed him. He's not dead yet, but they've killed him for sure."
Jesse reported,
"There were a couple of guards when we got here, but once I melted the door, they took right off through there."
He pointed to another door in the back wall of the room, then shook his head, half embarrassed and half aghast.
"Lissa was right, but I'm not sure what we can do for him."
Nate bowed his own head before once again laying a hand on Ralph's head and reaching out through the fields. Time seemed to stop as he extended his senses into Ralph's body and allowed the energy that underlay the universe to flood through him. An indefinable time later, Nate opened his eyes and sat down abruptly on the floor. The table Ralph was manacled to had a great crumpled half-frozen handprint in it where Nate had been grasping it with his other hand, and the metal was flaking away in dry, denatured hunks. Ralph, on the other hand, no longer looked like an old man. He didn't look 17, as Lissa had claimed, but he did look young again. Nate had found so much damage in Ralph's body that he hadn't been able to heal all of it. Some was fresh, and that had responded readily to Nate's ministrations, the cells returning to a state that they obviously knew to be right. In the final examination, some of the damage had simply been too old. Ralph's body had accepted the damage, and while Nate could see how someone more skilled than he might attempt to reteach it what health was, the task was beyond him. Still, he had managed to repair most of what the emulging had done, bringing Ralph back from near death into health and wholeness. Nate's friends were all crowded around, and after a moment, Jesse stepped forward. He drew on Energemetra 6 and pulled apart the shackles that held Ralph to the table. There was a long silence as they all just stared. Then Ralph moaned. Ty said wonderingly,
You can't do that. Entropic shock can't be healed. It's like aging. It's impossible.
Nate looked at him, eyebrows raised, and Ty flushed a bit, then grinned.
For anybody but you, I guess.
John stepped in close to put his own hands on Ralph, and green power raced up and down his body. He looked at Nate.
He's fully healed. There's a little damage left, but it's all old. How did you do it?
Nate shrugged with a tired smile. I'd love to know who decided it couldn't be healed in the first place. I'll see if I can figure out how I did it, then maybe I can teach you. At that, Nate pulled himself to his feet and smiled at Lyssa. Come see me at Adamant later, will you? For now, I think he's going to need your help. She hesitated, then nodded. He turned to the others, his face grim. For now, I think I'd better have a word with the adjutant. As they left the Bridewell a few minutes later, Shannon stared back up at the stone block structure with a frown.
Bridewell. Seems like a really strange name for a place like that.
Andrew laughed.
Probably something historical. There's a lot of that in Aurora.
The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that concludes Chapter 12 of The Veil of Mysteries. Thanks for being here, listeners. Everybody, thank you, Luke. Thank you, Mel. Oldest, second, third. Appreciate it, everybody. And with that, I think we're done for the week, and we will see y'all next time.